A growing crisis of housing and rental affordability, gentrification, displacement, and houselessness is everywhere in the news in Portland and around the country and worldwide. Here in Portland and at the Oregon State Legislature, major policy changes, including Portland's residential infill plan and Oregon House Bill 2001, which would mandate that cities allow multi-unit housing on any residential lot, are moving forward and generating a great deal of controversy and polarization. But what are the national and global dynamics behind these interconnected crises? How does understanding shifts in global capitalism, including shifts toward increasing financialization and speculation in land and housing, help us to shed light on what's going on here in the Portland area and Oregon? What does the experience of other cities have to offer us locally in terms of lessons about what works and what doesn't, and what alternatives are there which would better address the very real problems in housing equity and affordability that we're facing? Joining us to discuss these issues and more is Michael Mahaffey. He is an urban researcher at KTH University in Stockholm, Sweden. He is also the executive director of the Portland-based Systasis Foundation. He is an urban designer and strategic development consultant, and he's been active in Portland area planning and building since 1991. He also hosts the blog livableportland.org. This is the first part of our two-part interview, and you can catch the second half of our discussion next Monday on the Old Mole Variety Hour. So welcome, Michael Mahaffey.
Thank you, Dan. I'm delighted to be here, and I'm really interested in the topics that you're talking about as well, because I think one of the things we really need to do here in Portland to get a handle on our challenges is to learn from other cities and have this experience of exchanging knowledge about what's happening globally, the global forces that are coming home to roost right here in Portland.
So let's start out by discussing the roots of these linked crises of housing affordability, gentrification, displacement, and homelessness that are really hitting us here in Portland, many other U.S. cities, as well as worldwide. What do you see as the primary causes of these crises?
Well, I think there are really two major factors. One is, you alluded to earlier, the financialization of real estate, the financialization of housing, of our homes and of our cities. And that is going on, you know, at a blistering pace around the world. You and I were talking earlier about the work of Saskia Sassen, who has documented some of the really amazing and breathtaking trends that are happening, empty condo units and, you know, consortia that are buying up properties and raising prices, kicking people out, and so on. And the other factor, though, is I think really our fault. It's our failure to understand the nature of these challenges, and we end up making solutions that are simplistic, and they're sort of silver bullet solutions where we're trying to come up with a magic formula. High on that list, I would put the so-called build baby build approach. It's true that we need supply to meet demand, but the idea that just adding supply in some sort of abstract sense is going to magically cure all of our problems is really naive on our part, I think. And we have to really re-examine some of our assumptions when it comes to that sort of thinking. You know, it really matters what we build, and it matters where we build. And that's really something that I don't think we've come to terms with yet.
Let's talk a little more about financialization and speculation. You're talking about the sociologist Saskia Sassen, and she's written about these sort of explosive increases in speculation in land and real estate, especially since the global financial crisis.
Right.
My understanding reading her work is that sort of capital looking for profitable asset classes has sort of moved into not just, you know, commodities, but now into urban land. You know, she talked about $1 trillion in buying of buildings in just the 2014-2015 year, many of which buildings, you know, left empty, particularly in, you know, big global cities like New York and Paris and London. But talk a little more about these dynamics. Global investors, international investors, pools of mobile capital looking at land as a profitable investment. And to what extent are we seeing that those same dynamics here in Portland? Is that money reaching us here?
Yes, it is. And, unfortunately, we tend to think of this as a Manhattan problem or a London or Paris problem. But the fact of the matter is there's a tsunami that's waving over us, washing over us, and is going to knock us flat if we don't get a handle on it. As you were saying, Saskia Sassen and others have documented this incredible surge that's going on right now in investment. And, you can understand it from the point of view of the people who are making the investments. They're often, they have currency see in countries like China and Russia and so on, and they want to get their money into what they consider stable assets. So American real estate is looking really, really good to them as a place to park their capital. And so what they're doing is essentially treating housing units, homes, as investment vehicles, as kind of safe deposit boxes where they can park this capital. And in the process, what they're doing, as you say, is they're not really terribly concerned about the return. They may leave the units empty, or they may jack up the rents astronomically. And then when the people move out, they don't lower the rents because they don't really care, because it's not really the point to earn a return on that investment. The point is to park that capital. So this is an incredibly powerful force that is going on around the world today. And Portland is unfortunately in that front line. We're maybe not the first tier of big cities that are feeling that pressure, but we're certainly part of that now.
Who are the other major sort of categories of players or interest groups? Other kinds of investors, but also, so who's in the mix? Developers, and what types of developers are we looking at? Builders, realtors, before we sort of talk about what these people want out of City Hall or what they want out of state government, who else is important to sort of understand as being part of the cast of characters here?
Right. Well, let me first sort of make a confession here, which is that I am part of the community of consultants and urban designers and developers. I've been part of development companies, had my own development company. That said, I'm sort of a dissident member of that group. In fact, I somehow sometimes jokingly refer to that group as the architectural industrial complex. And so when I say that, I include myself in that, and I critique myself as well as my colleagues who are part of this community. But the problem is that we lose touch with some of the larger values that are really important in a democracy. And so we need to temper those judgments that we make. And the related problem is that we become vulnerable to these forces of global capital and investment money. We get, in a way, corrupted by the rationalization of our own self-interest. And the great Jane Jacobs, the great urbanist who was in New York City, but actually came to Portland advised people here at the same time. She was a big crusader against the moneyed interests and the people who were wanting to build freeways and demolish huge tracts of neighborhoods and displace people and build projects that were ultimately unsuccessful. All those kinds of things. I think what we're seeing now is a kind of resurgence of that same kind of mentality that Jacobs was fighting. The sort of Robert Moses mentality, if you will. But now it's on steroids because it's fueled by this incredible surge of capital and real estate investment in particular. So I worry really about where we are right now as a city, as a city government and as a city culture, that the thinking at this point is quite distorted, unable to recognize what Jane Jacobs called the kind of problem a city is, and the kind of problem gentrification is, and the kind of problem affordability and sustainability are, and so on and so forth.
Let's get into some of the leading towards some of the specifics. Next week, we'll get into the real nuts and bolts of some of the actual proposals that are on the table right now, Portland's residential infill project and some of the state legislation. But sort of to get there, you talk about the increasing prevalence of what you call a build, baby, build mentality. We've got a mayor who has declared, Mayor Wheeler has declared that his goal is to sort of get as much new development approved as possible to shorten approval times. In Portland's unusual commission system of government, he recently assigned to himself all of the planning and housing related bureaus, and his sort of stated goal is to sort of speed things up. What specifically do you see happening at the city level that raises concern for you? What are the dynamics you're looking at?
Well, you raise an important point, which is that the structure of the bureau system and the structure of our commission is deeply problematic when it comes to, democratic representation of people on the east side of the river, for example, and especially in the far eastern neighborhoods and the other neighborhoods that aren't part of the core. And so I think that is a huge complication of the problems that we have today. And I think, as I said before, there's a distorted judgment that's going on. And of course, the problem right now is that the city is facing a crisis. People are increasingly alarmed by what's happening. And there's a temptation, I think, to reach for the silver bullet, to find something that we can cling to and hope that it will solve the problem. And at this very moment, of course, the thing that some people are promoting is something that is incredibly profitable to their own interests, which is, oh, hey, you really need to deregulate. You really need to, you know, raise building heights and lower zoning restrictions and do all the other things so that we can build, baby, build. And on the theory, the very simplistic theory, as I said before, that just adding supply is going to better meet demand and prices will lower. And of course, the problem with real estate, like a lot of urban systems, is that it's not that linear. It's a complex system, and you get all these unintended consequences. So, you know, you can actually add supply that makes a place more attractive and more people move there with more money and actually raise the value of the surrounding properties. But I think the lesson of that is that we have to be careful. We have to understand that this is a dynamic system. If you look at the evidence and the research, if you look at places like Vancouver, BC, for example, you see that build, baby, build does not work in the vast majority of cases. You really need a suite of tools, not only adding supply, but dealing with tax policy and regulation of foreign investments and all these other things that, as you said, we can talk about in a little more detail later.
Let's get a little bit more into those claims, though. What we read a lot, and I think what we hear a lot, is a connected set of claims. One, that there was I'm talking particularly about housing redevelopment in already residential urban areas, because I think in the Portland area, certainly a lot of the sort of the conflict has happened around the inner neighborhoods, the desirable inner neighborhoods, where developers are now finding it profitable to, say, demolish small existing homes and replace them with either a single mega mansion or maybe on a corner lot, two houses, very large, far more expensive. What we think we often hear, the reason that we're sort of facing an availability and an affordability crisis, is A, that there was underbuilding during the recession, B, that housing regulations are far too strict and prohibit developers from finding it attractive to create new units, that only by creating a lot more new units will we sort of solve the affordability problem. And drilling down there a little bit, I think the market is interested primarily in development that's affordable, that's profitable, building for upper middle income people and wealthy people, the high end of the housing market. When discussing this, a lot of sort of city officials and promoters of these policies respond that only by increasing supply, even if it's at the middle and upper middle end of the high end of the market, will the extra supply sort of trickle down and increase availability and increase affordability eventually at the lower end of the market. What's your response to those claims?
Well, as I said before, it is true that we need supply to meet demand, but the question is what supply and where is the supply? And, you know, part of the problem is this idea that you take existing small homes that often are, you know, African-Americans live there or other people. I know a lot of African-Americans are very concerned about what's happening right now. And the relatively affordable houses are being demolished, and then a bigger home or a duplex is being put in its place. And, yeah, maybe theoretically you're getting two units instead of one, but if they're you demolished a $300,000 home and you've got two $650,000 or $700,000 homes, you're not moving in the right direction when it comes to affordability or, for that matter, equity or sustainability. I mean, the problem is that it's a single variable thinking. It's you know, magic bullet thinking that just add units and that will solve our problems. I'm not saying you don't need to add units, but I'm saying we've got to be thinking more in terms of systems and broader urban systems. For example, there's this idea that if we only concentrate in the core, that's the place where everybody will, where the lifestyles will be the most sustainable and everybody will have transportation and maximum opportunity and so on and so forth. The problem with that thinking is that it ignores the reality of the situation, which is that most people in the Portland region live in the suburbs, and many of them have been displaced to the suburbs because they've been forced to move out of the core because we've been over-concentrating on the core. We've had these policies of, you know, build, baby, build, which has resulted in, you know, very nice, very attractive condo units and towers and so on and so forth. And again, that tends to create a more desirable city, and that attracts more people who are, in many cases, coming out of much higher property markets like San Francisco, Los Angeles, Seattle, and Vancouver. And when they're lured to Portland, I think it has less to do with the recession than the fact that we're bringing these people in who have a lot more money at the same time that we're bringing investors in, and going back to the global picture. So the actual mix of what's happening here is not going to move us in the direction of more affordability or more equity or more sustainability, unless we think of the region as a system, and we understand that we have to also work on the suburban areas. If you know, there's this theory, I call it voodoo urbanism, and I'll explain what I mean by that. Some of the listeners, maybe the people my age perhaps, will remember that George Bush Sr. famously criticized Ronald Reagan for his voodoo economics. And what he was talking about was supply-side economics, the trickle-down economics, you know, create policies that favor the wealthy and favor the investment in big companies, and it'll trickle down to everybody else, to the small companies and so on and so forth. And there's been a lot of criticism of that economic theory, starting with George Bush Sr., ironically enough. And I think what we're dealing with here in Portland is what I call voodoo urbanism. It's a version of the same thing. And essentially, it's the idea that if we just build a lot of tall condo units and we make the core really a great place, and yeah, we'll have so much money that we'll be able to create some affordable housing and set-asides and so on, that that engine of growth will solve all of our problems. I really see that thinking in the city government right now, this idea that let's focus on the core, let's really concentrate and overheat the core, and, you know, get the creative class going, the, you know, the sort of Richard Florida theory of urbanism. Ironically enough, Richard Florida has backed off of that theory and has recognized that this problem is backfiring. This theory is backfiring and creating gentrification and displacement and increasing inequality, increasing homelessness and many other problems. So I think we've got to think differently about the nature of our urban challenges. We've got to think more systemically. And my good colleague Joe Courtwright has written a paper where he essentially says, build, baby, he doesn't call it that. That's my my term. But build, baby, build will work. Because if you have people, and it's a little like musical chairs, you know, if you have the people moving into the big tall condos, they'll move out of the other buildings, and other people will move out of the other buildings and so on, and that'll free up more units. But that fails to recognize that, wait, Joe, you've got more people moving into the region. You've got people with much more money moving in from these other markets. You've got
well, and you've got the foreign investors,
exactly,
and the national investors.
All these things. So I just, he's not seeing, for whatever reason, he's not seeing the big picture. That's my view.
I find it, and we'll begin to wrap up here for the first segment for this week. I'm sort of struck by an irony that progressive or ostensibly progressive politicians and activists, many of whom are very sort of critical of the effects of deregulated markets, many of whom would probably agree that our current crisis of housing affordability and homelessness was seriously exacerbated by the kinds of deregulation that we've had since the 1980s, and exacerbated by the recession, the foreclosure crisis and our soaring inequality, who see the failures of deregulated markets, somehow are still or simultaneously wanting to believe or claiming that more deregulation of the housing market will solve our current affordability problem. What do you think explains this disconnect?
Yeah, it's ironic, isn't it? I mean, that Portland, which has conceives of itself as a progressive city, and yet this voodoo urbanism, which is, as I'm arguing, is a kind of a species of supply-side economics, has taken the city by storm. And, you know, people who have somehow come to embrace the idea that this is going to promote equity, it's going to be, you know, Portland for all, everybody's going to have a place to live, and it's going to promote lower housing prices, and it's going to promote sustainability and so on. I don't see any of that evidence. I see quite the contrary, and the literature that I'm familiar with is alarming, frankly.
I've been talking with Michael Mahaffey, and we've been discussing the global and national forces at work creating sort of our interlinked crises of housing affordability, gentrification, displacement, and homelessness. And we're going to continue the conversation next week on the Old Mole Variety Hour. We're going to get into more nuts and bolts and specifics about some of the actual proposals at the city level here in Portland and at the state level. Michael Mahaffey, thank you so much for joining us this week.
Thank you, Dan.
We got all this technology. Our dream was bold and vague. And then one city got bad planners. One city.